You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning, West Hill. As we do every week, we wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Each week, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and relationships, we have with our First Nations brothers and sisters, we read one of the 94 recommendations sent to all levels of government by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We expect to complete these readings in June 2017. Recommendation 31. We call upon the federal, provincial, and territorial governments to provide sufficient and stable funding to implement and evaluate community sanctions that will provide realistic alternatives to imprisonment for Aboriginal offenders and to respond to the underlying causes of the offense.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
I was going to use the example, when we talk about being grounded and what we ground ourselves in, I was going to use the example of Greta and I standing in front of a very large sinkhole in a botanical garden in Gainesville, Florida, standing on the edge of it, and I remember asking Greta, what's stopping us from becoming part of the sinkhole? And she said, nothing. So we could have been standing there when it happened. Excuse me. And so when the ground falls out in front of you, what grounds you if it's something that can change and move? You could be at the bottom instead of standing. But I was going to use that example, but I'm going to use the first hymn as an example because I chose that first hymn because of the words, and I did know the tune. I forgot that you might not. So you struggled through that thing, hard to sing. I was so proud of you. The words are fabulous, particularly right now. They're always applicable. But there, I'm playing, and I think nobody's singing but Babette behind me. She's got the music. So ground fell out from under me on that one. I won't apologize because the words were great and you did, you know, pretty well, not knowing it at all. Anyway, what we try to stress here is we ground ourselves in that very unpredictable thing called the reality of life. That's true. That's there. Up, down, bad, good, scary, peaceful. We ground ourselves in life. And then we just ask the question, how then shall we live? And we keep trying to choose the loving way to respond to that reality. We don't always know what it is. Sometimes we know what it is and we don't do it. And sometimes we know what it is and we do it and find we're not alone in it. And so the alone part can be fixed by that last one, which is growing in wisdom together. I've learned more from being wrong than I've ever learned from being right. And, you know, thank you for those of you that have pointed out things like that to me. And I'm sure one of you might have said something about the hymn. Greta has already shown me with a look in her eye. But does anyone know that one? I saw that. I saw that. I kept playing. But anyway, that's that grounded in life, growing in love. Grounded in life, guided by love, and growing in wisdom together.
It's just been a challenging week. The news that came out of the church was shocking. It had been, the decision had actually been made on the 17th of March, and they had chosen not to share it with us, which was troubling. But as I noted when I replied to someone who had asked me for a comment, the intervening week, which is the most symbolic week in the Christian calendar, was a week that we came here and we talked about dreams and how dreams get ground into dust day after day after day. And we have nothing that we can do about that sometimes, that we can pour our lives into a dream and die without ever seeing it fulfilled. But the other part of that story, the other end of it that we choose to tell here is that we have the responsibility to pick up dreams that have been ground into dust. We have the responsibility to carry them, to allow them to grow again in our own hearts and to share them beyond this community. So it wouldn't have mattered to me if they had given me that review appeal decision in the middle of that week, because I know we can do something with that. It doesn't matter what the decision is that they've made. We can do something with what it is they've left us with. We can pick those dreams up and we can make them something that will live and will grow and will continue to change people's lives and bring people hope and help them create meaning. And that's what we're about. I also want to express gratitude to the many of you that have contacted me this week. And I've had emails from Norway and Scotland and England and New Zealand and Australia and all over the States and Canada. And you are not alone. There are so many people who are supporting the work that we do here, and I am honored to be part of it.
We have three readings today. The first is from Jody Pricholt, who is a New York Times bestseller writer. In the space between yes and no, there's a lifetime. It's the difference between the path you walk and the one you leave behind. It's the gap between who you thought you would be and who you really are. It's the legroom for the lies you tell yourself in the future. From her book, Change of Heart. Second reading, also a New York bestseller author. You have a choice, live or die. Every breath is a choice. Every minute is a choice. Every time you don't throw yourself down the stairs, that's a choice. Every time you don't crash your car, you re-enlist. From his book, Survivor. The third reading, from Lewis Carroll. Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here? That depends a great good deal on where you want to go, said the cat. I don't much care where, said Alice. Then it doesn't matter which way you go, said the cat. So long as I get somewhere, Alice added with explanation. Oh, you're sure to do that, said the cat, if you only walk long enough. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
Many of you know that from time to time, or as often as I can, I'm working on a resource for clergy who continue to have to use the Bible as the texts that they read in their services, but who want to move away from just, you know, telling people what that means into sort of a non-theistic, post-theistic thing. So I read the passages for the week or for one of the particular Sundays as I prepare those, and then I choose the readings to go with them. So, and every now and then, because the Bible is written by human beings, I rewrite it. And just, you know, I'm not happy with what it said, so I rewrite it. So the passage for the Sunday I chose this week was actually one of my favorite passages. I loved it. I read it out loud to Scott. I cannot believe that the piece that I loved in there is so embedded in a whole lot of stuff that is really not anything I would have wanted to say was my favorite passage. So that's why it was so important that I rewrite it. And I'm going to speak a bit about that. So part of it is the focus moment, which you may have picked up as you came in, but I'm going to read you the whole package. Set before you are these simple things: life and prosperity, death and adversity. Each of us chooses the former, life and prosperity. We set our eyes upon it. But truthfully, the way is not what you think. Neither is it what another might tell you. For the road unfolds before you, created every moment by the person you are, the choices you make, and the circumstances within which you make them. No one has ever created the path that will be yours, and no one will ever walk that same path again. It is yours to create and yours to follow. There is no right path. There is no wrong way. There is only the road you create and the choices out of which it appears. Stay your heart to those things that hold your dignity: compassion, love, courage, and strength. Walk with these things surrounding you. They can neither change the course of history nor mask the tragedies that befall you, but they will cleave your heart to your right becoming. They'll cleave your heart to your right choosing, that by every step, the roadway you create and upon which you travel will be fused of trust and forgiveness. Trust in the inherent goodness within every heart you meet, and forgiveness extended to all whose hearts are hardened against you, against humanity, against the future. May the vast heavens above us and the unending earth beneath our feet stand witness today to this truth. Before us lies both life and death, joy and sorrow. May we ever choose that which lies truest to our hearts, and in so doing, make manifest a path of beauty upon which we walk our lives. The passage that I rewrote was typical of many passages in Scripture, and typical of a mindset that wraps many who walk within a worldview that is set by particular beliefs or understandings that require a certain thing to happen in order for them to be happy, to live a fulfilled life, to survive in some afterlife. And the choices that are set out are very clear. We get, in the Bible, it talks about how we get a choice of good or bad, and if the good is clearly what's been set before you, and it's told to you, and you can do it, right? But I was so intrigued by that statement in the Jodi Picoult piece about the space between yes and no, providing us the legroom for lies. The lies that we will tell ourselves in the future. Because we don't live in that world of the yes and no, according to biblical tradition, where you can actually do everything in the yes and get the ultimate end that is set out there as what it is that you're looking for. We don't actually get that easily. We have yes and no, but we don't know all the time what it is that we should do. And we don't sometimes have all the information. If we know what the outcome is going to be, and it's shocking and terrible, and you would never want it to happen, then of course you wouldn't choose that thing, right? Like, if you knew that, it's easy to know that's the no, right? The no is the place blows up, you know, if you leave the gas on and then walk in and light a cigarette. You know what the repercussions of that are. You know what the bad choice is. That's a pretty simple thing. But there are lots of no's that we don't really know, because you don't know what's going to happen. So if you make a choice, and it's a choice that has a substantial outcome, and you know that substantial outcome, you either avoid it or you find ways that you can mitigate that. But if you don't know, you just make the choice, right? So And if it's something that doesn't have that kind of outcome, then you just do it. So say you're making your grocery list and you open the drawer and there's 6 pencils sitting there. Which pencil to choose? It's not likely going to make a lot of difference. You know, you're writing a list. So you take the pencil, you get the paper, and you write your list down. But what are you going to put on the list? Does it matter? Well, it does if you're having someone to dinner who is a potential business partner or perhaps a life partner, and you're wanting to really impress them. So you would want to put things on that list that, you know, would be the ingredients of foods you'd want to prepare, that would, you know, set that out very, very well and impress that person. So you put those down and you go to the store and you purchase those things. Now there's really, what are the repercussions of that? You know, you're making food, right? What can go wrong? We don't think of the repercussions until they eat the Caesar salad and, you know, you find out they have a fish allergy and the anchovy sauce is like, oh my gosh, and there's like a paramedic in your dining room before you know it, right? You didn't know that repercussion. So when you wrote that list down, it wasn't high in your mind, right? If you'd known that, you would have steered away from that perhaps and made something else. Or they may be a vegan and you put together a crown roast of lamb. Maybe you could have known that too. But there's other things that we don't know. Say dinner goes smoothly, no allergies show up, they eat everything that's put on the table, and they go home and you've made a fast friend because things went so beautifully. But there are other things that you don't know, perhaps about that list that you made up, the strawberries that you put in the dessert, for instance. You didn't know that they're grown in California and totally safe to eat. I mean, the chemicals that are used to raise strawberries are not actually sprayed on them, so you're good to eat them, right? They're sprayed on the ground, right? They're sprayed on the ground so that the ground can yield more strawberries than it was really ever expected to yield. But we need those many strawberries because we have to have them year-round. So it's sprayed with this stuff that actually has been banned. You can't use it because it's really toxic and because it's destroying the ozone layer. So you can't use it. But it's sprayed there every year under an annual reprieve, you know, like you get an annual permit to be able to use it. So they spray it anyway. They did manage to get the one off the market that sprayed and airborne causes cancer in anyone who almost touches it. And the workers who were harvesting the strawberries, although that it was approved for use, unions and farm worker federations and voices, the public outcry against that got that one banned. So it's not being used. There are no annual you get to use this one things when it comes to that. But you get to still destroy the ozone layer and you still get to take advantage of, you know, the health of the workers who are there. You didn't know that when you put that on your grocery list. So the choices that we make are, we base them on the repercussions of which we are aware. But knowing all the repercussions is such a fantastically enormous undertaking that it could just make you stand in front of that drawer and look at those pencils and never be able to decide. Just an overwhelming thing. That space between what it is that we should do and what it is that we shouldn't do is that space for the legroom for those lies that we'll tell ourselves later on. I chose this vehicle because I needed the comfortable seat, you know, and I know that the mileage is ridiculous, but I needed it. We tell ourselves, we rationalize, and we come up with decisions. And that's that path that I wrote about. It's not just about the life and death and choose life. It's about the path that we create every moment and every decision. And how many of us are hemmed in by the contexts in which we live our lives. In here, those contexts are pretty broad. We have a lot of latitude in the decisions that we make. But the voices of the people whose names you brought into this place and whose situations you brought into this place, lots of them, they're hemmed in. Their contexts are much, much smaller. They don't get the kind of choices that we do. And people who live down the corner, around the corner, you know, their contexts are different. they live differently. And the people, the 150 children on suicide watch in First Nations communities, you know, they have different contexts out of which they make choices. And we have to be aware of what our contexts are so that we can make choices. So that we know as much down that food chain, as we possibly can as we make our choices going forward. Allowing ourselves for the contexts in which we live and the way that they circumscribe our choices. One of the things that we don't do here as much as I think we might, but which I think is a significant and important part of creating meaningful community, is we don't convict ourselves very often. I mean, I tell you stuff you need to know, and if you follow my Facebook feed, there's way too many issues there that you just don't want to get involved. But there's so much that we do on a regular basis that we don't stand in front of one another and say, I did this. I did this, and I know I'm complicit. And I know it's a problem. We don't give one another the opportunity to bear our sorrows, to bear our guilt, to bear the things that we've done that we wish we hadn't done. We don't tell people that, you know, when my dad tried to reconcile with me when I left home that time after that huge argument, and he sent me a letter pages long that he never did. And I ripped that letter up and I never read it. We don't tell each other that stuff. We don't own who we are completely. And I want to build a community that invites us to do that. Maybe not in a room full of 100 people. I get to do that. Talk to my therapist about how I can say those kinds of things to you. And I know you're not going to come back at me with it, so I'm perfectly safe being vulnerable. But you sharing stuff with each other, that's a different story. I understand that. And I know that some of you have built relationships with others where you can tell those stories. You can expose the ways in which you are guilty, the ways in which you feel ashamed. Because one of the greatest gifts that community can do is pick you up after that, is look you in the eyes and say, I know, and that's okay. Can say through their eyes to you, I see you. I don't see that picture you've been giving me anymore, that perfect person. I see who you are, and I still love you. That's what community can do. And that, I think, is one of the most profound needs of the human heart, to be seen. Not that projection that we put out there with a smiley Sunday morning face, but to be seen for who we are, all the blemishes and the scars and those things that we wish we'd never done. The thing that community does that I think is the greatest threat, the loss of which is the greatest threat to society at large and to the future of our children, is that piece of work, is that moment of recognition, that absolution that takes place between two people, not between some, you know, priest and somebody else, but between two people. When we get freed of that guilt and that shame, and we can walk again into newness, into that choice of right or wrong without slugging all our wrongs with us, we can walk into a moment of newness and perfection. And we can start again. We'll screw up again. You know, we know we'll screw up again. That's why we come every week, right? Because we'll screw up again. But imagine the power that we would have if we walked out of here knowing that we were good, that the mistakes that we made were mistakes, even when we made the choice to make them knowing what the repercussions were. Imagine who we could be if we just started again with as much possibility and as many dreams and as much hope as would be in a in a newborn child who's just experiencing stuff and growing from there forward into newness. Building and creating and imagining and being part of the world. That's what this is about. And that's what you are about. And that's what I hope that you offer one another when you are in this place, so that you can learn to do it well and often, and that you can offer it to people who will never come to a place like this. We're losing places like this, mostly because what happens in them doesn't have much meaning anymore. But we need the impact of this kind of place on the world out there, in the grocery stores and in the workplaces and in the family homes and in the parks and on the streets and in, you know, concert settings. We need the impact of places like this. And so we keep working together. We keep coming together. We keep telling our stories to one another. And we keep looking to see who that other person really is, so that we can actually love them. And loving them can let them be free. So thank you for that work that you do. Thank you for inspiring me. Thank you for holding the knowledge that I tore up that letter. Thank you for loving me anyway. So let this be your house of peace, the place you carry inside you when you leave this place, the place that allows you to be who you are, so that when you need to protect yourself out there, when you need to not be in the places where you would be destroyed, this place holds you. Go from here knowing you are watched by everyone. Everyone follows the trail of your beauty and wills for you the best that might be, because they too are in that house, and it is in your heart, and you take us everywhere you go. Go from this place in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.